morning. This morning marks the second occasion that Donna Redwing has addressed this group. She was previously here in April 1999, for those of you who might remember that. Then she was a visitor to Des Moines. Now she is a resident and the new director of One Iowa. We are extremely fortunate to have her here with us. I got to know Donna 12 years ago when she worked for the Human Rights Campaign in Washington, D.C. She organized a group of activists from around the United States to act as trainers for LGBT issues in the 2000 election campaign. I will always remember those three special days in the nation's capital. Before joining One Iowa, Donna served as executive director of Grassroots Leadership, a national team of organizers who help community, labor, faith, and campus organizations think critically, work strategically, and take direct action to end social and economic oppression, gain power, and achieve justice and equity. Donna served as chief of staff at the Interfaith Alliance, Walter Cronkite's organization in Washington, D.C. She was one of three members of the 2008 Obama campaign's kitchen cabinet on LGBT concerns. She also served as Howard Dean's outreach liaison to LGBT communities. Donna has held leadership positions at the Gill Foundation, the Human Rights Campaign, and the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. She was featured in a Sundance Award-winning film about the 1992 struggle against the radical right and their ballot measure number 9. Donna was the first recipient of the Walter Cronkite Award for Faith and Freedom. Now, we've all been called names from time to time. Now, in contrast to that award, and I love this, Donna was named the most dangerous woman in America. Christian Coalition in a 2004 Des Moines Register article. She serves on the National Board of the Velvet Foundation, which is building a national LGBT museum in Washington. Before moving to Des Moines, Donna and Sumitra, her partner of more than 25 years, lived in the mountains of Colorado with their dogs, Doc Watson and Cinnamon. It is my special pleasure to introduce to you America's most dangerous woman, Donna Redwing.
I do owe the Christian Coalition, you know, a thanks for that. It is going on my tombstone. When they were asked to go a little deeper, though, and it was Rob Borsellini who wrote the article, they said to him, I was dangerous because if I were their neighbor, I'm the person that they would trust to walk their dog, water their plants, and be a good neighbor. And that's what made me dangerous. Before I begin, a friend this morning handed me this, Be Glad Speaker Urges Gays to Make Their Presence Known. This was back in 1995, I think my first foray into Iowa. I was on an RSVP cruise in Mexico and flew to Ames from that cruise to speak to a group of students. And I just have to share with you what I said back then and then contrast it to what I say today, I guess. The article says that I talked about bigotry and the roots of bigotry are fed and fueled by fear and ignorance. The racial and ethnic slurs continue. The gay jokes get told and laughed at. The discrimination and degradation goes on. And back then I said, we can change the way people think about us. No, think back, 1995. I said that eventually we will win this holy war. We have to. I think we'll win because we will finally believe we have the right to win. And then, and please remember this was 1995, I ended by saying, we're here, we're queer, we are in the Midwest, America, get used to us. So, it is a great honor to be here this morning at First Friday, and it was at the invitation of a man I've known for a very long time, Jonathan Wilson. So Jonathan, thank you for the invitation. I'd like to introduce myself as an advocate and an activist and sometimes as an agitator. These are the things I think that I do best. I've had great opportunities with boots on the ground to work in Oregon, to work around the country, as you heard, to work in various LGBT organizations. But here I am, the executive director of One Iowa. It's been a long and strange and wonderful trip. And as I thought about it this morning, I realized that everything pointed to this place and this time, to this work and to this struggle. Since we last met, and that was 13 years ago, I thought of some of the things that might be of interest to you. Since we last met, I was arrested with an Episcopal bishop in Denver, Colorado, at a protest against his church's refusal to ordain LGBT out non-celibate priests. Now, that was a number of years ago. As we know, the church just last month, in an extraordinary move, approved liturgy blessing to same-sex couples. They have come a long way. But as I remembered that bishop, he was in his late 70s. We were handcuffed together. And I realized he was flirting with the arresting officer. And then as the handcuffs were clicked on, he leaned down to me, and some of you will know this. He leaned down to me and said, "Donna, this is like something from Tom of Finland." God bless the bishop. Now, I have to tell you that we were arrested, and there were many of us who were arrested, and they put us, if you've ever been arrested, they put us in buses, and then they would, like, lock down a part of the bus and then put more people and more. And, you know, we were older people, I should say, since I last saw you last, I have joined the AARP. It was hot. It was a hot summer day. We are in like this tin can of a bus and we're handcuffed. So I asked the officer if he could please handcuff us in the front. So he unhandcuffed us all and was coming back to handcuff us again in the front and said, "Oh, I can't be bothered." So we were unhandcuffed, which was lovely. Then I called him over and said, "You know, it's really hot and we're really thirsty. Could you get us something to drink?" And he said, "Okay." And he went, well, he asked for our money, and we said, "Well, we don't have any. All we have is our license and the name of our lawyer." So he went and bought 120 of us cold drinks. We had a lovely time with our Tom Finland officer. So since I saw you last, I'm working with Interfaith Alliance. I help bring together 100 Mormon leaders in Salt Lake City to sit in a room and listen to the Reverend Sewell and Gaddy talk to them about why they need to get out of the business of opposing same-gender marriage. These 100 Mormon leaders, and I have to tell you, it took 2 years to get them to do this, but they listened to Reverend Gaddy, they heard Reverend Gaddy. 6 months later, we polled those 100 LDS leaders, and 48 had come to the place where they thought they were wasting their time and their resources opposing same-gender marriage. If you remember, remember the play Angels in America? It ended with the protagonist saying, "The world only spins forward." I have to believe that. Then there was a time I was with Maggie Gallagher from NAM in Tucson, Arizona. We had set up a debate between she and Reverend Gaddy. And somewhere in the middle of the debate, I realized that she was slurring her words and she was acting a little funny. And I knew she hadn't had a drink, so I was wondering what was going on and realized she was in some kind of diabetic fugue. And I have to say, the evil part of me was going to let her go on, but I couldn't do that. So I believe that we actually saved, I'm sorry, Maggie Gallagher's life that day. We stopped the event and got her medication. And then there's a time when I was on the kitchen cabinet with Barack Obama, and I cussed at him and asked him if he was out of his mind just a few weeks before his election to the presidency. And if you want to hear more, that's a one martini story. I then spent, and I thought you'd like to know this, I spent 4 hours one evening with George Clooney. That is a two martini story. I'm not telling you anymore. And then, in the last few years, one of the strangest things I did, I met with James Dobson at Focus on the Family. I spent 3.5 hours with him, another 2 hours with his media director. Not much good came of that. When we were introduced, he said, "I know why you're here." And I said, "Good, then let's get to business." And it was a very strange event. So that's a 3 or maybe 4 martini story, so there. So after more than 25 years in the LGBT equality movement, 20 of those years on a national level, I realized sometime last year that I wanted to come home. I wanted to live in a community where my neighbors knew my name, where they cared about who I was. I wanted community, and I wanted to engage boots on the ground, organizing and advocacy. Iowa, even though your caucus process is the weirdest thing in the world, and this summer is a convection oven, Iowa seemed like the place where Sumitra and I could find community. And we have. After 26 years together, we celebrated that momentous event on July 17th at the home of Mike Simonson at a One Iowa reception. But after 26 years together, we decided we wanted to get married. And Iowa seemed like the place. So there will be invitations July next year. Many years ago, Sharon Malaro showed up at my office in Washington, D.C. to tell me about Iowa. And I've had a connection with this state ever since. I think that was 1994 or 5. Now I am an Iowan, a member of the staff of One Iowa for 1 month and 4 days now. I've had my crash course in Iowa politics. And all I know today is that I have a great deal to learn. I can now get to the office without the GPS, yay. But I know that there's a lot of people in this room who can help me learn more. And so today I'm asking for that help. Since the 2009 marriage decision, marriage equality in Iowa has been a highly politicized issue. From the 2010 judicial retention vote to the 2011 House resolution banning marriage, the conversation has been largely framed in the context of political battles. With 3 years of marriage equality and other, I think, LGBT successes, we understand the need to significantly invest resources in order to help change hearts and minds, to increase public support for the freedom to marry. And so our focus at One Iowa is shifting toward building long-term support for marriage equality among Iowans through public education. Given the high percentage of undecided Iowans, we've learned that the most effective way to build support is to engage people face-to-face through meaningful and personal conversations. And that's why this public education work is going to be so important. I believe that on the issue of marriage equality, as Iowa goes, so goes the nation. It's imperative that marriage and all of the rights and responsibilities of that institution are protected in the state. Losing marriage equality in Iowa, I think, would be devastating to the national movement and would impact thousands of American families. Did you know that if we looked at population numbers, the states with true marriage equality represent only about 15% of the total U.S. population? That means that more than 85% of America's same-gender couples cannot be married and are denied all of the rights and privileges of marriage. It's Iowa, I think, that leads the nation on marriage equality. One Iowa is dedicated to reaching out to every corner of the state, to talk to people from different backgrounds and facilitating the kinds of conversations in houses of worship, at libraries, in people's homes, the kinds of conversations about why marriage matters. We've helped to launch Iowa Republicans for Freedom. Our next opportunity for those Republicans in the room is a post-election visibility event with Ken Melman. That will be right after the elections, and we are reaching across the aisle. Our public education and field work includes a supporter house party program, a speakers bureau, an innovative campus outreach program, and then our Home for the Holidays program really works with students all the way to our elders. It's about coming home and being who we are. Our communications work is amazing. If you haven't met Molly, our communications director, in the last 6 weeks, we've placed 5 Huffington Post blogs, and I'm now an official Huffington Post blogger. We've had an interview for a PBS-BBC special that will be shown around the world on the elections, and we have commented on everything from the Wiggins retention to the Chick-fil-A debacle. And I don't know if you saw our comments, but they were, we have bigger fish. Oh, we mean chicken to fry. We organize and mobilize using techniques that range from on-the-ground grassroots organizing to statewide phone banks. Or as one presidential candidate once said, we organize with shoe pads and mouse pads. It's clear that Iowa is the test case. Iowa is the laboratory for the national marriage movement, and the stakes could not be higher. What we learn here, the lessons and the experiences of Iowa, will teach us how to attain and sustain marriage equality in the heartland. And in, as Eleanor Roosevelt used to say, in those places closest to home. You have won the right to marry. In 1999, when I was here, who would have thought? You have won the right to marry. But in what has been called the Iowa anomaly, the rights and benefits of marriage, including equality and parenting rights, are not forthcoming in some instances. We have so much work to do to change hearts and minds, to make sure that our win is not simply the right of marriage, but the rights of that institution. It must include the cultural equality that we ultimately seek. I think Iowa is up to the challenge, and one Iowa will be there every step of the way. You know that we're in transition. You know that we've had a rough road. Our staff is small, but they're smart and energetic. Just look at Maddie here. We're rebuilding, we're refreshing the organization, and we will be there in this great struggle every step of the way. So I'd like to end my remarks with something that the late and great Molly Ivins used to say about our work. She said, "So keep fighting for freedom and justice, beloveds, but don't forget to have fun doing it. Be outrageous. Rejoice in all the oddities that freedom can produce. And when you get through celebrating the sheer joy of a good fight, be sure to tell those who come after how much fun it was. It is my hope that here in Iowa, together, we will have a fabulous time fighting for equality." Thank you very much. Applaud yourselves. Most of America doesn't really get that Iowa has marriage equality. You know, we are not New York, and we are not Los Angeles, and we are not, you know, the great states of New England. We are the Midwest. And what you have done, and eventually I hope I can say what you have done is absolutely astounding. And I believe that when our neighbors to the north, our friends in Minnesota, when they win in November, they're going to look to us to how it gets done. When we have those struggles in the South, I've just spent a lot of time in places like Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina. When they begin to move forward on marriage equality. What happens in New York doesn't resonate for them, but what happens here will. You not only gained this amazing thing, you have to sustain it. And then you have to be willing to teach the rest of the nation how to do it. And isn't that just wonderful? So I hope that, I know that you're up to the task. I'd love to answer any questions people have. Yes?
Yeah, you alluded to a Supreme Court justice who's going to be up for continuation of his position in the coming election. Is Juan Iowa going to do anything to try to help him retain his office, unlike what happened with the first three?
We think that, and I wasn't here, so, but we think that the move to oust Justice Wiggins is clearly a move against our win in Iowa. And I don't know, I looked at some of the stuff that came out of the last retention failure, and people danced around that issue. I think we can't do that anymore. We have to be very clear. The radical right is very clear what it's about. Yesterday, the statement from the GOP was very clear what it was about. So yes, we're going to have a lot of dogs in that fight. And we have a 501c3, a 501c4, and a PAC. And we will be very, very present. And we will not be shy about that at all.
Are we going to try to get One Iowa in cooperation with many other like-minded organizations who have a coordinated fight?
Yes, there's a group called Justice Not Politics. It includes about 24 organizations around the state. They've been meeting a poll. They're actually deciding on a pollster on Monday, I believe. We'll do a poll to really see what the landscape looks like, and then each of our organizations will be part of a cooperative effort. What I think One Iowa's role is, we're the authentic voices and faces of this struggle. It's our stories, it's our narrative that has to be a part of that. And so I think someone described the last campaign as somewhat tepid. I think it's going to be very different this time. We know that that there will be a lot of money invested on the other side. We know that NOM is coming in, that Bob Vanderplatz is engaged, and although he's so busy with Chick-fil-A, who knows, you know. So yes, the answer is absolutely yes, and I look to your counsel around how we can be most helpful in that struggle, but we're part of a coalition, and we will be there. And it's, I think there isn't a day that goes by where we're not working on it. So, yes?
Speaking of Bob, you've been to Salt Lake City and to Colorado Springs on the international league in Northwest Iowa to soften the Sarge.
Not anytime soon. I wouldn't even know how to get to Northwest Iowa, so I think I don't have the currency yet. I really don't. I waited. I lived in Colorado for 5 or 6 years before I met with Mr. Dobson. I think you have to know why you're there and what you're going to get out of it. I knew why I needed to meet with Mr. Dobson. I got what I needed, actually. It wasn't a lot, but I got it. And I see no reason to meet with Bob Vanderplatz at this time.
You'd have to fight his heart first.
So before you soften it, yes, yes, yes.
Does One Iowa plan to endorse Christy Vilsack in her bid for office?
Our PAC board has not made that decision, but I would be stunned if we did not. I would be stunned. I think it's, And personally, and I can speak personally because I've made my decisions, I'm waiting for the the fundraising call. I'm waiting for, you know, an opportunity to help in any way I can. So, yes, way in the back.
How will any Supreme Court decision affect when I'm
excuse me?
I'm married. What would the Supreme Court decision on California, how will it impact Iowa?
And I think it's a big if and when. I really haven't given, I mean, I've thought about it, but I can't give you a good answer. What do you think? What do you think?
I would like nothing better to happen than make you not have a job, but I don't want you to have a job. But I would think that the federal Supreme Court would overrule anything any state has.
I think you're right.
And then the people locally here would have to start moving Supreme Court justices in their own way on federal level.
You know, the civil rights movement, the Lawrence case was decided, right? There was a lot of work for lots of people after that. I think we have to be ready for whatever that decision is. I honestly, I'm not an attorney, you know, what do I know? I think, though, whatever that decision is, we have to be ready either way and not start to think about it the day of the decision. So I think there are lots of really smart people in this room who should be thinking about it now. And I'd love to be part of those conversations. Yes?
Just another thought. You know, I know Ohio and a number of organizations use the social media, use Facebook and Twitter. But I'm wondering if, in some issues like the Chick-fil-A thing is going on, I've seen a lot of, you know, anger expressed by the community. Mm-hmm. And you sometimes wonder if that's all that helpful for our postings. You know, every now and then you run into a really good post that explains things in
a good
manner. And I make a point of trying to get those out in my postings, saying, to my straight friends, please take time to read this.
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, if you provide that, the best of that information, the best of those responses to that social media, and you think about the vast number of people that we have, that is such a way to educate people. And you know, I guess I'd like to see one Iowa, a number of gay organizations, whenever we have an issue such as this, come back with that really good piece that explains what it's all about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was one on Chick-fil-A recently in regards to, it was a blog about sticks in my craw. It was a title. You read that one? And it was such a good explanation for a lot of people of why this is angering the gay community. But I don't think a lot of the straight friends are getting this information in a way that they can use it.
Right, right. There was one great article, Matt, that we put up, Maddie, that we put up. Who was that? Who wrote that? It was a Des Moines Register person. And we put it up on our website. It was just a great laying out. There's a lot of misinformation out there. When I saw that the media director for Chick-fil-A passed away, a heart attack, and saw the response of some of our community, I was horrified. As angry as we can be, I think we have to deal with people with some amount of civility and respect. A man died, probably from a stress-related heart attack, and some of our community were almost dancing on his grave. That's not okay. That's just not okay. But thank you. I think that I think we'll take that. Maddie's in charge of our new media and social media, and I think we have not done that as much as we could in the past, and we need to. So thank you. Thank you. I think we assume everybody knows everything, and I've said to people, so you know Barnum, and they're, what's Barnum? I mean, we all know what Barnum is, but when I talk to my friends in Maryland, you know, they don't know it. Yeah.
And the same thing happened to us a few years ago with the Cracker Barrel, you know, fallacy. But it went away. We made it go away. You know, I'm sorry that a man died and everything, but we don't go to Cracker Barrel anymore.
Right, right.
And I think if we just stand our ground and just stay firm, it'll go away. Because they cannot kill us. They cannot beat us down.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I just think that the death of this man was a horrific tragedy for his family, and to see what some of our folks have done. I agree with you. We stand our ground. We have stood our ground. Think about the last 15 or 20 years. I remember when I first met Evan Wolfson, I thought he was out of his mind, and so did everybody else. Evan Wolfson was talking about marriage in 1987 and 1988, and this is a man who really stood his ground, and we get to celebrate marriage now. So I think we stand our ground, but we have some amount of civility. And there are times I have not been civil. There are times that I should not be civil. But fried chicken?
One more question.
Yes.
One last question. If you've got a wealth of knowledge, information, a lot of great stories, if we do happen to see you out and about and learning from that, you did mention, what is your favorite martini?
Dirty vodka up three olives.